Now, say my name.
It's Matt Coon!
You're goddamn right.
And welcome to Total Engagement with me, Matt Coon, on the MLW Radio Network, brought to you by our good friends over there at WrestleZone.com, the world's most widely read news site of wrestling on the planet. My name is Matt Coon, and we have had a busy week of wrestling. The Raw premiere, the AEW debut, the NXT two-hour debut, and of course, SmackDown, which just took place. And today, we are going to take a step back from all of that and listen to what has become one of our more popular segments here on Total Engagement, Crime in Wrestling. It's the Marijuana Chronicles in Crime and Wrestling, today on Total Engagement with me, Matt Coon. We're going to call today's episode the Marijuana Chronicles because regardless of what you think about the legality of marijuana, and of course it's changed over the last few years, the stories we're going to tell are about the breaking of laws. At the time, these were laws that were broken, and whether you believe they're righteous laws or not, these stories have to do with not just laws being broken in regards to what many think is a harmless drug, but also real life wrestling career consequences. And of course, who better to start off with than Rob Van Dam?
Speed limit 55. I checked your speed at 73.
Oh, I thought it was 65. I'm sorry.
Okay.
We were wrestling in Huntington tonight on our way to Columbus.
Who are you wrestling for?
WWE.
Is that right?
Nobody else.
I don't follow wrestling.
No, I just mean we're like, you know,
somebody on TV or something.
Yeah, world champion.
What do you go by?
Rob Van Dam, RVD.
Oh, okay, I've heard of you.
Yeah.
What's your name, Ball?
Sabu.
Sabu. 55, man.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't realize. I thought it was 65.
You're rolling pretty hard.
I don't need to do that.
No. Do you drive with your shirt off?
It was very hot leaving the area. No, I don't.
Did you wrestle tonight?
Yeah, just a few minutes ago.
Do you have any marijuana, guns, knives, drugs, anything like that in the vehicle?
49.
Can you explain to me why your car smells like dope?
This particular story about Rob Van Dam comes to us from ProWrestlingStories.com and our good friend JP Zarka. So Rob Van Dam's name has been synonymous with marijuana and recreational marijuana use, and even lately medicinal marijuana use, as he's become more of an advocate over the years. But in 2006, it got him into a lot of trouble at the worst possible time in his career, because at the time, he wasn't just the ECW champion. He was the WWE champion. So that means it was finally at a point where they had decided, well, Rob might be the guy. And he was in West Virginia, and he was going to Philly. And of course, who was he with? Sabu. It was July 1st, 2006. And RVD was pulled over for speeding. Now, everything was going cool, and the officer was even like joking around with him until he smelled some weed inside the vehicle. The officer then performed a search of the car and discovered RVD to be holding 18 grams of marijuana alongside 5 Vicodins, while Sabu was found holding drug paraphernalia and 9 tablets of, I don't even know what this is, testolactone. Both RVD and Sabu were arrested, and they later posted bond. The fact is, 18 grams of marijuana is not a small amount, and having 5 Vicodins is no joke either. The combination of all those things together, they were arrested. And the timing of the arrest couldn't have come at a worse time, as I said earlier, because he was in the midst of what would be the biggest push of his career. He'd won the WWE Championship off of John Cena at ECW One Night Stand. And if you remember, that was the show at the Hammerstein Ballroom where people had signs that said, if Cena wins, we riot. WWE was also in the midst of trying to revive the ECW brand. And because of that, that's why RVD was holding that title as well. This shows a couple things. Number one, they were taking a chance on ECW. And number two, they were taking a chance on Rob Van Dam. Now, Rob Van Dam was someone who a lot of us thought should be pushed to the moon, that could be a world champion. And this was kind of as fans of RVD are shot. And then he gets arrested for weed, which a lot of us think is apropos because of his gimmick and his real life feelings on it. But at the same time, it doesn't work for PR. And it certainly doesn't work for Vince McMahon, because when WWE learned of the arrest, they suspended him for 30 days. WWE.com also released a statement saying he would be allowed to compete on Monday Night Raw and ECW TV the next two nights while they quote-unquote conducted an investigation. But this was because he would have to drop the WWE belt on Monday and the ECW belt on Tuesday, and fans at the time were disappointed, but they weren't surprised by the arrest. One fan on the GameSpot.com message boards wrote on the day the news got out, "God damn it, why did they have to screw it all up? RVD is no Cena in the eyes of the McMahons, and they will punish him horribly." While another fan wrote, "I guess it's not really a surprise that this happened. It was only a matter of time. I would venture to guess that Edge will win his match with RVD now." And before we get to that, what was the reaction behind the scenes? Well, according to the Pro Wrestling Torch, July 8th, 2006 issue, that RVD and Sabu were concerned for their jobs, Wayne Keller wrote. "Sabu especially because he has less tenure and clout with the company. However, Vince McMahon has become a fan of Sabu's style and persona. He felt he was a vital member of the ECW roster, so when the offense was relatively minor, his job was safe. In fact, McMahon approached Sabu after the ECW televised event on Tuesday night and told him he appreciated how he had been handling the situation since Sunday and looked forward to working with him in the future." Wayne Keller and the Torch also reported that this entire situation might have put potentially the ECW brand at risk, because ECW was already seen as a group of rebels or misfits, and it's well documented that the locker room included open drug use by many of the wrestlers back in the day, some of whom have since died drug-related deaths. If Sabu and RVD put WWE in a position where suspensions or dismissals were deemed necessary, it would have thinned out the already shallow ECW roster depth. Now, the WWE had a lax marijuana policy. It would only test you for marijuana if you gave them probable cause. Now, one might argue that just being RVD might give you probable cause, but I think it was kind of a implied thing that, you know, as long as it didn't interfere with anything, it would be fine. But if you are arrested or convicted or admit to a violation of the law relating to use, possession, purchase, sale, or distribution of prohibited drugs, the person is in material breach of contract and subject to immediate dismissal, which does not necessarily mean they would be immediately dismissed, but it does give them the ability to alter a contract or suspend them. But Keller goes on to report, "By not smoking pot at home or in his hotel room and speeding while smoking in the car, RVD made it impossible for WWE to look the other way." And one WWE staffer, embarrassed by the publicity, tells the Torch, "This is disappointing. This was an error of judgment. Why even bring that stuff on the road?" And said one veteran ECW wrestler, "It only takes one mistake by a wrestler to kill a town, or in this case, a brand. I take this personally. Everyone has been doing jobs for them, so hopefully they can be top draws for ECW. The stink is over our entire locker room when someone does stuff like this. When you make mistakes, you hurt others. It's about being a grown-up." Said another veteran ECW wrestler, "Everybody's been so careful about not fucking up, because we all knew Vince was probably told we were a bunch of fuck-ups. This certainly doesn't help." RVD was his usual nonchalant self. While Sabu had a conversation with Vince, RVD was his usual nonchalant self behind the scenes, according to Keller, on the Monday and Tuesday, not even selling the incident, not even showing that it affected him, not apologizing for it on a grand scale, and there's no word of any private apologies either, and having a business-as-usual demeanor. And of course, as part of his punishment, he was booked to lose the World Heavyweight title to Edge on Raw and the ECW title to Big Show on Tuesday, and to begin a 30-day suspension. But did this have long-term effects on RVD? If the drug arrest hadn't occurred, does RVD think his career would have turned out differently? Well, by way of pro wrestling stories, there's an interview in the Baltimore Sun where RVD gave his thoughts. He says, "There was no way I was going to be the longest reigning world champion in WWE. Nobody thinks that. People like to say the plans were dropped for ECW because of that night. Heck no. Most people think that it was just a transitional moment anyway. From my perspective," he goes on to say, "when people say that couldn't have happened at a worse time, I always say it couldn't have happened at a better time. You're never going to hear me apologize for that. The fact is, if I was at WWE and ECW world champion at the time, nobody would have cared. It would have been all over the news. The day that Sabu and I pulled into the Philly arena and had to tell Vince, and I knew how much I disappointed him and dropped the ball on his immediate plans, I felt bad that day. I was feeling like I let some people down. But that's the way emotion is. Emotion takes the place of logic, and until you work things out, you're a victim of it. Eventually, I can see the big picture, and that's how it goes down in history, and I'm okay with that. He goes on to say in the interview with the Baltimore Sun that he paid a $100 fine for possession of marijuana. However, since the WWE suspended him, it ended him costing him like $30,000 or $40,000. And you know what, he said? I asked for more time off at the end of the 30 days. That was one of my favorite months of my contract. That's how much I wanted out of there and how much I missed being at home. Despite the arrest coming at a time where RVD was getting the biggest push of his career and him taking a hit of up to $40,000 in fines, he was okay with how everything turned out and has no apologies for it. He even considered this to be one of his favorite months of his contract, as he said. It comes to show, despite being pushed as the top dog in the company, the grueling schedule can be a bit much to handle. So you have to take those rare opportunities of downtime when they come, even if it means via a drug suspension. And when we look at that, RVD is a guy, he's very let life take its course the way it should, but it did affect his career, and it did affect the ECW brand. You heard the quotes by the ECW wrestlers. And his career was never really the same in the WWE. He sounds like he doesn't care about it, but I would assume if it didn't happen and he was able to build some months and the ECW brand may have been a success, he might think differently. For our second story of the Marijuana Chronicles, we're going to go to one of the most historic situations in the history of wrestling. Historic in that, in a lot of ways, it ended kayfabe in wrestling. New York Daily News, May 26th, 1987. Two professional wrestlers who took a fall for drug possession were freed on bail to grapple with each other in a bone-crushing, chair-smashing tag team bout and are scheduled to grapple with the New Jersey court system on Monday. Hacksaw Jim Duggan, 33, a traditional all-American good guy, and Hossern, the Iron Sheik Vaziri, 43, an anti-American mat-set heavy who allegedly hails from Iran, were arrested for possession of marijuana and cocaine. Both were immediately suspended by the World Wrestling Federation. A trooper pulled them over on the Garden State Parkway at 2:40 p.m. Tuesday when he noticed Duggan swigging beer while driving toward Asbury Park for a bout at the convention hall. As he was checking Duggan's license, the trooper noticed the smell of burnt marijuana in the direction of the other man, said Sergeant John Cavallari of the Holmdale Barracks. Cops said they found several partially smoked marijuana joints in the car's ashtray, 3 grams of cocaine in the Sheik shaving kit, and a small quantity of marijuana in a bag belonging to Duggan. Duggan was given summonses for drinking while driving and the possession of marijuana. The Sheik was released on $5,000 bail. They were scheduled to appear in Middletown Court on Monday. After their release, the wrestlers continued to Asbury Park for a tag team match that pitted Sheik and Ken Patera against Hacksaw and Nikolai Volkoff. Hacksaw won after breaking a total of 4 chairs over the Sheik's turban. Now, this story has far and wide implications. For you to understand that, you might have to understand a little bit more about Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Of course, the Hacksaw Jim Duggan that most of us know is this guy who wielded a 2x4 and said, ho, and that wasn't very good. Ho! And a very one-dimensional character who just yelled USA a lot. But the Hacksaw Jim Duggan that came into WWE, pre-WWE, was a gigantic babyface for Mid-South. He wasn't a one-dimensional character. He was very much a blue-collar, working-class hero type who was the number one babyface for Bill Watts. He was a guy that most people would put on their short list of people who maybe even could be the next Hogan. When WWE signed both him and Ted DiBiase, they really cut out the legs from under the Mid-South territory. They took their best heel and their best face, and you see what happened with DiBiase. DiBiase actually got his hands on the title a little bit, was in the main event picture, and there were big plans for Duggan. Duggan was signed to the WWE in January of 1987 after leaving Mid-South, shortly after it turned to UWF. They did a loser-leaves-town match with the one-man gang, who also eventually showed up in WWF, and he was signed, and it was a big free agent signing. It was another big territory star on the same level of what a Kerry Von Erich would have been, on the same level of what a Magnum TA would have been. He was a huge signing, and his first appearance was at WrestleMania 3, where he debuted, and he came out, he interrupted the national anthem with Nikolai Volkov. It looked like this guy was going to be headed for greatness and was going to be given a big push. You see the push DiBiase got. Duggan had showed unlimited potential on the babyface side. But WrestleMania 3 took place in late March of 1987. The arrest took place in May of 1987. So he had already feuded with Nikolai Volkov to start, and Duggan was doing the house show loop with Sheik because that was the feud they're going to get him into. Don't forget, Sheik is a former WWE champion. He's a guy that was a former tag team champion. This is a guy who had a lot of cachet. Duggan going over in all these matches would have done a lot to boost him and raise and elevate him as the second babyface to Hogan, perhaps even replacing him. At this particular show in Asbury Park, the Iron Sheik did not have a ride from the airport. It was the afternoon. He asked Duggan if he could have a ride. Duggan is a new wrestler in the territory. Of course, he came from the Bill Watts system where faces do not consort with heels, but he didn't feel like he had that kind of pull, that kind of stroke to say, no, I'm not going to give you a ride. So Duggan agrees to drive Sheik to the show, which is probably unusual at the time because kayfabe was still very much a thing, even in the WWF. It wasn't a level of where it was in Mid-South, where in Mid-South, if you lost a bar fight, you would be fired. That was how seriously they took the behind-the-scenes, real-life personas of these wrestlers. But Duggan's driving. He's with Sheik, and Duggan's from Louisiana, where they had drive-in daiquiri huts and things like that. He wasn't used to the rest of the country. He hadn't worked in the rest of the country, so he popped open a beer, and he's drinking a beer. And then he also had some weed, and he said, hey, Sheik, you want to smoke some weed? And Sheik's like, sure. So they're driving, they're smoking, and what got the cop to pull him over was seeing Duggan sipping the beer. And as the newspaper reported before, Duggan was seen sipping the beer, the cop pulled him over, smelled the weed, and according to Duggan, once they smelled the weed, they called more cops in, where he was used to a more lax situation in Louisiana. He hadn't traveled that much, he wasn't aware this would be so serious. A bunch of cops were called, they put Duggan in one cop car, they put Sheik in the other cop car. When they searched them both, they found cocaine. And as you heard from the New York Daily News report, they didn't say who had what. It just said cocaine and marijuana. Like these guys were all partying together, or these guys were really good friends. And they're not really good friends. Duggan will say to this day, this was a work associate. This was an acquaintance. This wasn't a great friend or a party buddy. He just happened to be giving him a ride and happened to get caught. Of course, they get pulled. They go to the jail. They post bond. Sheik tells the story that Duggan called his dad, who was the police chief in Glen Falls, New York, and that's why they were able to get out that day. Duggan tells a story he called him the next day and told him. But whatever the reason, they both were able to wrestle that day, and Sheik was approached by Pedro Morales, who was an agent at the time, as well as George Animal Steel, who was the agent at the time. He said, what happened? They told them what happened. They said, don't tell Vince. Okay. Then they thought it was blown over, but then the newspaper report came in. And that next day with the newspaper report, that's the day that Duggan says he made two phone calls, one to his dad and one to Vince McMahon. And he tells a story that if he ever tried to call Vince, he would be on hold for a long time. But this particular time, since the story came out, he was on hold for like 1 second. He was like, Vince McMahon, please. He said, hold on. It was like, click, hello, Jim. Jim Duggan said he remembers it to this very day that Vince McMahon said, what have you done to us? Jim, what have you done to us? This was the amount of weight that was on Jim Duggan, and he would carry with him throughout his career. Vince told him to take his pack of airplane tickets, because back then you would use paper tickets and give you a pack of them. He told him to turn his tickets and to go the fuck home. And he went home, and he thought he was fired, and he put in a call to Dusty, even Dusty Rhodes down with WCW, to see what the possibilities for work were. And apparently WWE got wind of that call because Bruce Pritchard called up Hacksaw Jim Duggan and said to him, hold on, it's cool, we're going to bring you back. And of course they did bring him back, but he was never reaching that potential. He was never on that fast track. He never, quote unquote, got the gas, as he said, to the push that he had every reason to believe. And any of us who followed wrestling at the time had any reason to believe that he would get, considering what he was before. Never world champion, never intercontinental champion, never a tag team champion. He believes this was held against him, and he believes that it hurt his push, and he believes it hurt his career, this one incident. Not because of the drugs, not because of the arrest, but because of the lack of kayfabe, and because he was caught with the Sheik. Quote from the Pro Wrestling Torch interview from Hacksaw Jim Duggan, he says, "I don't think I ever regained the momentum I would have had before the arrest with the Iron Sheik. I think I was on the fast track. I think I would have been world champion, intercontinental, or tag team champion. I never regained the momentum. I think a lot of guys, it would have totally crushed their career, but I was lucky enough to survive it and actually thrive after the arrest." To just show how much this affected Vince McMahon and how much it affected Hacksaw Jim Duggan and the WWE, Bret Hart wrote in his book, quote, "Vince had immediately fired them, and now he was giving us a long lecture on the absolute necessity to kayfabe." This was the day after the arrest, by the way. And this is a quote that Vince is quoting Vince McMahon of saying, "The days of a six-pack and a blowjob are over," he shouted. And Bret goes on to say, "All the wrestlers had this say it ain't so expression on their faces." And then he told everyone that he was instituting a mandatory drug test for cocaine and that anyone who failed would be suspended for 6 weeks without pay. The second time you get mandatory rehab, paid for out of your check. And the third strike, you're fired. As for the Iron Sheik, he wasn't much longer for the WWE in any case. I think physically he couldn't keep up much longer, as we saw when he showed up to WCW for a couple matches, even though he stayed on the payroll for a while. Duggan never had the career everybody thought he would have, and the WWE was changed forever. Kayfabe was broken, and drug testing was instituted. And it was all because a cop smelled some weed. Now here is a third story of a career that was affected when an officer smelled some weed. And again, it's not about whether or not it should be illegal or not. It's about the fact that this was illegal. An officer smelled some weed and it changed a wrestler's career. Now Jack Swagger in 2013 was on fire. He already had a couple pushes, but this push looked like it was going to stick. This was in the middle of the We the People gimmick that had gotten some mainstream attention, whether it be some Fox News, whether it be some detractors, Glenn Beck, and he had been inserted into Elimination Chamber. He won the Elimination Chamber, which gave him the shot at the title at WrestleMania. Now, right before WrestleMania, and just to give you an illustration of when this was the same week that CM Punk and John Cena had that great 26-minute one-on-one match on Raw to decide who would face The Rock at WrestleMania. And the following Tuesday, the next day, they had the SmackDown tapings. On the way back from the SmackDown tapings in Biloxi, Mississippi, Mr. Jake Hager, known as Jack Swagger, was arrested for DUI and pot possession. He was pulled over for speeding, determined to be under in the influence of a drug. So he got a DUI, but it wasn't for alcohol. It was for weed. He was released early Wednesday morning, and he was booked on misdemeanor charges of speeding, driving under the influence, and possessing weed. He was given a summons to appear in court on March 12th, and he was found guilty of a DUI, was fined and given 6-month probation, didn't get any jail time, because, you know, that would be pretty ridiculous. But what came out in the trial is that he was stopped by police. He told police he had just showered, stopped by at a fast food restaurant, was pretty banged up after the SmackDown tapings. The officer testified that Swagger was driving 10 miles per hour faster than the speed limit, and he smelled burnt marijuana in Swagger's rental car. The officer also saw a few pieces of marijuana on Swagger's lap. Swagger didn't testify, but a video recorded by a patrol car camera was shown, and Swagger told the officer that night he had smoked some marijuana before leaving the Coliseum that night. Swagger told the officer, "I know I fucked up. I apologize, man." An officer testified that Swagger handed him his credit card when asked for his driver's license. Swagger's speech was slow, his eyes bloodshot and watery, but he was cooperative, nervous, and talkative. He was just as docile as a gentleman could possibly be, the officer said. A video showed Swagger taking a field sobriety test in 44-degree weather on the side of the road. The DUI officer described the test as a walk and turn while counting and a one-leg stand, also while counting. Swagger stumbled a few times while waving his arms in the air to balance himself and stood on one leg. This is the quote. It was probably by far one of the worst I've ever seen as a DUI officer for under the influence of marijuana, the officer testified. Swagger was fined $1,000 plus $300 in court costs for the DUI conviction. He was also fined $198 for speeding and must attend an alcohol safety class. What? And a victim impact class. Swagger can get his license back in 90 days if he completes the classes instead of a year. So, of course, you got to pay the piper. You got to go through the legal system. But there was consequences to be paid in the WWE legal system, if you will, because he was scheduled not just to be in WrestleMania, but he was definitely being thought about as someone who would win. He was definitely not someone who was being thought about as an afterthought. Again, this is in the midst of the hottest the We the People thing was with Zeb Coulter, aka Dutch Mantel. Knowing Vince, knowing the WWE, they were going to lean into this. There was no doubt in the minds of many people that after he won Elimination Chamber, that Mr. Swagger was going to win the title off of Mr. Del Rio, and the heat would be what it was. This is definitely the direction things were going. So what did they do at WrestleMania? At WrestleMania, instead of winning, he lost. He unsuccessfully challenged Del Rio for the World Heavyweight Championship, which by most accounts, he would have been scheduled to win. And the following night on Raw, they killed the whole angle when Swagger and Zeb Coulter were defeated by Del Rio in a 2-on-1 handicap match. And then they pivoted right away, because if you remember, Dolph Ziggler cashed in the Money in the Bank briefcase on Del Rio to become the new heavyweight champion. And that de-emphasized Swagger right away, took away his momentum that he had, took away all of the indications that he had that he would become a future champion of consequence, which he definitely was going to be if he had won the Elimination Chamber, which is your guarantee to the WrestleMania match against the World Heavyweight Champion. And that was all because an officer smelt a little bit of weed. So that has been Crime in Wrestling this week, the Marijuana Chronicles on Total Engagement. We hope you learned something. We hope you were entertained. And maybe just a cautionary tale. If you break the law, you break the law. And one moment of your life can affect the rest of your life, no matter how benign or how harmless it seems to be. But something that's not benign is Total Engagement with me, Matt Kuhn, coming to you every single day. I want to thank you for supporting us. Thank you for listening. Please tell all your friends all about your new favorite podcast, which is Total Engagement with me, Matt Kuhn.